Tihi Doctrine op Redemption Tihra Grace 147. 148 Lectures on Ancient Philosophy. The integrity of the individual was the keystone of pagan idealistic philosophy. The unfoldment of the triune nature of man, spiritual, mental, and physical, was based upon the foundation of personal integrity. Even the most bigoted church historian must admit that the magnificent edifices of pagan learning were raised upon the solid rock of personal virtue. Their philosophy emphasized to both the Egyptians and the Greeks the indispensability of right thinking and right living as prerequisites of right being. Though the standards of ancient integrity may appear curious and obscure to this generation, they unquestionably produced an ethical type surpassing in many ways the products of what we conceive to be our more enlightened code. While the pagans are now regarded as a superstition-ridden people because of their offerings to their Lares and Penates, it remained for Christianity to present the human race with the most indefensible and at the same time the most vicious of all superstitions, namely, the doctrine of vicarious atonement, the redemption of a sinful world by the supreme sacrifice of one just man. While the myth of the dying God is to be found in many religious systems, Christianity was the first and only cult to construe the mythical incident as a literal atonement. Christ becomes, so to speak, a scapegoat, the sacrifice offered up that the people might go free. According to the Church, the Passion abolished the old order of approach to divinity and supplanted it with a brand new modus operandi of salvation. Heaven, earth, and hell were all dislodged from their time-honored foundation lines, and the sins of all creation were wiped out by the blood of the Lamb. Even the impassive sternness of deity relaxed at the spectacle of this sublime and supreme ordeal. The incident of the crucifixion monopolized the stage in the drama of Christianity, for it speedily overshadowed any and all other dogmas to such a degree that mere admission of the universal import of Christ's incarnation and death became the sole prerequisite of spiritual redemption. Thus a new standard of integrity was created which, however, still conveyed to the enlightened few its cryptic message of mystical ideality, but which could not fail to be interpreted by the unenlightened masses as evidence of the supremacy of words over works, of affirmation over action. Whereas the criers of the pagan mysteries, according to Celsus, declared the superior worlds to be attainable only by men and women of outstanding intellect and lives consecrated to individual regeneration, the criers of the Christian mysteries offered heaven with its eternal bliss to anyone who would confess his sins and affirm the divinity of Jesus Christ. 20 centuries of application have demonstrated the danger of the doctrine of vicarious atonement undermining the morale of Christendom. This concept has resulted in a philosophy of special privileges and exceptions which has infected church and state alike. This doctrine has caused the history of Christendom to be written in letters of blood. Nearly all who have enjoyed its privileges have donned the garments of sorrow, and kneeling in sackcloth and ashes cried for liberation from the bondage of its dogma. An emperor of China once said, "Wherever Christians go, they whiten the soil with human bones, and I will not have Christianity in my empire." How can anyone who has sensed the dignity of the universal plan reconcile the eternal justice of divine procedure with the rite of excommunication in which the body religious ejects into outer darkness some offending hand or foot, enjoining such a soul forever from further participation in the goodness of God? How insignificant must be the power of that heaven or that hell which mortal man so easily manipulates at will, where in the realm of all that is noble and just is their place. For the concept that the souls of millions of babes are doomed to wander in the black vistas of the lost because they died in infancy without baptism, a faith cruel enough to espouse. Such doctrines inevitably inspires cruelty in its followers, for if it will damn its own with such unfeeling malignancy, how can it be expected to show mercy to the stranger without the gate? The survival of the church, therefore, is contingent upon its own realization of how it has misinterpreted both the real mission of its founder and the symbolism of the pagan cults from which it derived the subject matter of its creed. Chris. Tehe Doctrine of Redemption Through Grace 149. 150 Lectures on Ancient Philosophy. Tianidi will never be a great religion until its adherents recognize that it is merely a new body serving as the vehicle of an old idea, that when it departs from the original concepts to wander in the maze of theological absurdities, it defeats the primary purpose for which it was conceived. These unnatural attitudes of theologians toward life have resulted in the establishment of an unnatural faith wherein the lofty principles of the ancient philosophers have been distorted out of all semblance to their true import. Christianity as the only true religion is worthless. If the faith, however, be regarded as a definite step in religious evolution, it is then possible to estimate its importance with a reasonable degree of accuracy. Christianity is not the sole revelation of God to man. It is but a fractional part of the body religious. It is simply a crutch upon which the genus Homo leans until he learns to stand and walk alone. It is something he believes in before he is capable of believing in himself with understanding. Like all external things, it will finally pass away and be remembered only for that which it contributed to the inner realization of its devotees. The three major doctrines concerning the plan of redemption are: 1. Redemption through mass effort, 2. Redemption through individual effort, and 3. Redemption through the vicarious atonement. The Jews, as a chosen people, are an example of the first concept. Platonic philosophy, with its repeat emphasis upon individual achievement, is carrot an example of the second, and Christianity, with its world martyr, is the outstanding example of the third. Throughout the entire structure of Western thought, there is a definite emphasis upon the factor of individuality. In the Orient, however, perfection is considered possible only through the annihilation of individuality. Without much careful examination of their underlying principles, these divergent systems of philosophy are apparently irreconcilable. To the trained thinker, the attainment of perfection as the result of individual effort is by far the most rational viewpoint toward the problem of redemption, for it is natural to presume that in an orderly universe each element must diligently work out its own salvation. In things spiritual, humanity in general realizes all too well the insufficiency of its own knowledge, and only because of its fatuous belief that it can reap where it has not sown is the situation rendered bearable. The doctrine of the vicarious atonement opens the gates of heaven to millions who in their own right are not entitled to admission. It is surprising the tenacity with which this idea retains its hold upon the public mind, even after modern educational facilities have dissipated the theory of a personal God. The palpable inadequacy of the literal interpretation of the vicarious atonement is almost conclusive proof that it has a more subtle significance only to be discovered by the most searching analysis of the philosophic elements involved. The doctrine of the vicarious atonement is based upon the debatable question of the precedence of love over law. It is written, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life." John 3:16. If the postulate of a personal deity is accepted, then it is not unreasonable that a just creator should send his representative into the world to make known his will to man. It is not philosophic ally sound, however, that God should love the world more, because that self-same world had crucified his only begotten one. In the early writings of the Church Fathers it is declared that Christ, by virtue of having died for mankind, appeared before the throne of his Father to intercede for the world for which he had sacrificed his life. Like his prototypes Bacchus and Dionysus, Christ was a personification of divine love, the inexplicable emotion. Since the dawning of his rational faculties, man has striven to understand the position occupied by spiritualized emotion in the universal plan. He is able to classify the entire procedure of life and postulate the laws by which the universe is governed, but the riddle of love has proved more elusive than even the riddle of life itself. Since man invests deity with feelings akin to his own, so God was considered to be not only the Lord of judgment and Tihi Doctrine of Redemption, Tihra Grace 151. 152 Lectures on Ancient Philosophy. Order, but also the Lord of Love. Since man loved those who were close to him in the world, so he visualized the deity as likewise bestowing his affections upon those chosen peoples who obeyed his laws and made proper sacrifice. As the outgrowth of this man-made concept, the God of antiquity was ever swayed by caprice. At one time he would exalt his people and prosper their efforts, at another time he would scourge them with his wrath and wreak his vengeance upon them. Like Zeus on Olympus, the Creator was subject to constant moods, at one moment minded to scatter with his divine lightnings all his fashionings and the next to elevate them to a parity with himself. Since God had created man, it was assumed by theologians that he must also to some degree remember and love these imperfect products of his handiwork. Hence, to redeem an inconstant creation from its own inconstancy, the Word took upon itself flesh, and being fashioned in the image of man, dwelt among men, preaching the law and giving those who accepted the law an opportunity to survive the Armageddon, which would sweep away the unbelieving. After that event, the earth, it was presumed, would then become once more an Edenic garden where the elect would dwell in unbroken felicity throughout the uncounted eternities of futurity. The inner realization of the truth of this concept was redemption, and ensured membership in the body of the redeemed. To the scientist and the philosopher, however, it is evident that God is not a man nor in any way limited in his manifestation by the laws governing the inferior creation. In spite of all theological argument to the contrary, it is unthinkable that the universal spirit whose dwelling is immeasurable space, and in whose vast nature suns, moons, and stars are infinitesimal atoms, could have localized itself in a little Syrian town and been born in the image of a man. In our search for fundamental truths we must discard the notion that the various elements in this mysterious drama are personalities, and thus restore them to their true dignity as universal principles. For many centuries it has been believed that to destroy the personality of God was to detract from his magnificence.